now at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, thanks for stopping by. We'll be taking the Good Gardening Stroll shortly, but right now you can give us a call to get in line, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. I will start with better be watering things. It's getting pretty darn dry out there. And Mr. Kelly, before you take off, how was your flight?
Our flight?
Yeah, didn't you go on that Jeff Bezos? I thought that's where you were last week. That's what my understanding was.
No, I kind of wish I had. That looked like a lot of fun.
I thought I saw your name on that list.
No, what? I couldn't afford it. I was thinking about it, but a little short this month.
Oh.
Would you do that?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah, I figured it would be fun.
I didn't realize they were just going to go straight up and come straight down. I thought they were going to float around a little bit.
They were only up there. What was a 10-minute flight. That's even shorter. Alan Shepard's flight was 15 minutes. So I don't know why they just don't go up in the Vomit Comet. If they want to just go weightless, you can go up there and go weightless in the plane that they used to train the astronauts.
Right.
But I guess you don't get the view of the Earth and that, so that would be pretty cool. But it'd be awesome.
Yeah. I mean, but I thought sure that's where you were last
week. No, didn't leave the Earth.
Oh,
I'd like to, believe me.
I was going to get your autograph.
Well, you could have my autograph anyway.
Well, that's true.
Only 10 bucks.
All right. Thanks, Brian.
You bet.
It is Saturday morning, and we can get together and discuss whatever's going on in your landscape. So, got any questions, concerns about whatever it happens to be outdoors, or it doesn't have to be in your landscape. It can be your house plants as well. And hopefully you'll use the information I'll share with you and make a really good, solid decision on making the final judgment on what action you want to take. And by the way, this is your show, and I appreciate you inviting me into your home, car, or wherever you happen to be listening. Another very important player in the game is Alex. He's producing. He answers the phone. He pushes the buttons and keeps me from going crazy. Anyway, I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994. And I can come to your home and do a landscape consultation if you'd like for me to do one. I call it a walk and talk. You can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. On the homepage, there's my email address and phone number. And that's where I can be reached. This past Wednesday, wonderful. Ellenwood in Clayton, this house was just absolutely spectacular as far as the amount of varieties of plant material and everything else. And when I find out that there was the lady that lives there pretty much does most of the work herself. This just seemed incredible. It was just a tour de botanica, let's put it that way, from the front yard around to the backyard and the sculptures and all kinds of other stuff. So that was really enjoyable. And then today, after the show, I'm headed out to Town and Country, where I'll meet with the people from Sunset Landscape. And we're going to be looking at a house out there that they're looking at taking care of. So anyway, the Good Gardening Stroll is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. I'll tell you, it was a perfect sunrise as far as the really orange ball. So the fog or clouds or whatever that was that created that impact, you don't get to see that all that much, but it was really nice to be up that early and be able to see that. So I headed south on Highway 30, or Gravoy, if you want to call it. And there, as I got to this valley, I looked to the right. Grant's Farm, all right. And then what I did is I went over to the other side of the road, south side, and that's Grant's View branch of the county library system. And when I parked in the back, where that's where all the parking is, I was greeted by a huge amount of juniper berries. On all the junipers, upright junipers they have in this area is just unbelievable, the amount of juniper berries that are on there. And spectacular hydrangeas. The white was so pure. The parking lot was really a botanical wonder in its own way. I didn't realize. I had not really paid that much attention as we drive by or something like that, but it was really striking. But I was heading for the community garden. And the signage explains what a community garden is. Another sign reminds, look, don't pick. These are all raised beds, and plantings include all kinds of, I should have probably kept count on the different varieties of tomatoes that are being grown. There was asparagus, there's zucchini, there is some sunflowers that are not necessarily huge as far as height goes, but the base at the stalks at the ground level were 3 to 4 inches. They were huge. There was flowering corn. There's a nice bench there and a picnic table as well. There's all sorts of herbs planted in all these various raised beds. And a shed at the end of the area where people can store things, I'm assuming. Or there's tools there, probably hoses and everything else. And the raised beds numbered all the way up to 28. There's a compost bin there also. It was pretty full. And on the way back from the compost bin towards the building and my car, zinnias, purple coneflowers, black-eyed Susans, peppers. Some of the peppers were, I don't know if there were two different varieties or not. Some were really green, but some of them were going to red. And so that was really kind of nice. There was one variety of tomato that I noticed that still had the tag or the name tag on it. It was called Black Kim. And there's all sorts of onions. As you know, how I feel about onions. There was giant onions and regular onions as well. Petunias, begonias, arugula, annual salvia, ever-bearing strawberries, because they were still, how do I know they're ever-bearing? Because they were still in flower. The June-bearing ones have already finished and would not have any flowers on them. There was lettuce, sweet potato vine, numerous structures to help support varieties of plants. Robins were singing, crickets were chirping or chattering away. It was a perfect day to mingle in Grants View Community Garden. And the sponsors are Aetna, Gateway Greening, and St. Louis County Library. So it was a nice, mellow day in the community garden. So Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We do have some phone lines open if you do have any questions or concerns about your plant material. Let's start off in Mary's yard. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Mike. Thank you for this service. I have four crepe myrtles that are, I thought they were goners, but they have revived, and a few of them have some blooms on them, not many, but it's the Delta Jazz is the variety. Something is chomping on the leaves, and I may have asked you about this last year, and I forgot what you told me to put on the leaves to stop that.
Well, the best thing to do is go out there and try to find out what it is. Do you know what a Japanese beetle looks like?
I do not.
Okay.
No, sir.
It's kind of a fairly small beetle, and could be on the underside of the leaf, and they have a bluish-green, really shiny look to them. So my guess is it's Japanese beetles, so you need to go out there and check. And if you do have the Japanese beetles, you need to spray an insecticide, whether it's insecticidal soap or whatever you choose to use, directly on the beetle.
Okay. Do you have a variety, a brand that you recommend? Or I don't want to know a brand, but I would just look for something for Japanese beetles. Then.
Well, I mean, insecticidal soap should kill them. But, yeah, you could just look for, I don't know if they're going to list individual bugs that they're going to control. But, go to your favorite garden center and see what they recommend. And then you can make the decision from that.
All right. And I have one other small question. Sure. I have a honeysuckle that, and it's called Sergeant or Major or something. And it is... it's on a 6-foot fence, and it has pulled itself off of that. I had to reattach it with some wire. I had it hung with it climbed up a mesh kind of product. I had it attached with some Velcro straps, and they broke. So it's way, way over 6 feet. My question is, when it cools off, can I cut that maybe down 2/3?
Now, you're talking about, this is a vine-type honeysuckle, right?
Correct, yes.
Okay. So, yeah, like a red trumpet or whatever. But, yeah, what you can do is just wait till the growing season's over, and then you can do the pruning. And since they're summer bloomers, you got all the time to prune all the way up until probably early spring, because that's when the flower buds for that following summer would be forming. So you got all the way from, let's say, September until March to get the pruning done.
Okay, that's great. I'll take care of that. Thank you for your service. I appreciate it very much.
Sure, my pleasure. And thanks for having me on your show. And now let's go down to Arnold and go into Bob's yard. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Mike. I got brown spots in my zoysia.
Well, it's, you know, it's tough to tell exactly what it is. How big are the spots?
Well, it's a pretty good size.
Okay, so is it one single spot or is it one just
about? It just runs down the hill, just in that one spot, and got one on the far side a little bit.
Yeah, you might have, you know, it might be a fungus problem and it might be an insect problem. The best thing you can do is to get down and take either dig up a square where the lawn is still green and where it's brown and take it up like a 6-inch square and take it to your favorite garden center and have them take a look. Or get down on your hands and knees and look, because there's an insect that can cause a problem, but there's also a fungus that can cause the problem. And
it didn't seem like it done any good.
What's that?
I put the fungicide down, but it didn't seem like it done any good.
Well, maybe it's not a fungus problem, then. Maybe it's an insect problem.
You think? I looked at it. I can't see no chinch bugs running around down in there. But
well, yeah, chinch bugs are about a quarter inch, so you really got to get down there and look close. You can't just look down. They're not like grubs or anything.
I've been digging in the ground.
Yeah, so if either that or it's just an overly wet spot, and because your downspouts are shooting water down on them, and then you would think it would be a fungus, but maybe it's a bacteria type thing. So, yeah.
Well, would you recommend me put on there to try it?
I would say just to sort of shotgun it. I would it's a little tough. I would go to your favorite garden center and explain to them what you got and see what they recommend.
Okay. I got some cinch bug stuff. Will it hurt to put it down?
No, not at all. If they're not there, it's not going to harm, it won't hurt your lawn or anything else. And all it could do is possibly, maybe if you've got some grubs in there, and the grubs won't eat bluegrass. Or this is bluegrass, right? Or is this zoysia?
Zoysia.
Yeah, so, grubs, most of the insects won't eat zoysia. It's only a few different, relatively rare insects that do cause problems. So, I'd go ahead and put it down.
Okay. One more question. I was getting ready to fertilize for August. Can I go ahead and put that down, or would you recommend hold up?
No, I would say, I wouldn't necessarily fertilize a brown area, but the rest of it that's green, this is the time when you want to get it done.
Yeah. I was getting ready to, but I wasn't sure. And now that fungus, how often can I use that?
Depends upon the type. That's why you have to read the label. Some of them, it's only apply once every month. Some is every other week. And it depends upon the weather. So probably every 2 weeks would be my guess.
About every 2 weeks?
Yeah.
As I said, I got some cinch bug killer. I'm going to try that on it. And then I'll go take some down to the nursery.
Right, and also realize if it is that problem, regardless of what it happens to be, eradicating the problem is not going to turn that area back into green.
Yeah. Well, I know, but it looked like terrible,
I understand.
But I got green in the brown. You can see the green leaves.
Right, green blades, okay.
Blades, I mean.
So it's just, it's just, lawns here, this is the worst, probably the worst place in the entire country to grow lawn because of our weather circumstance and everything else, and transition zone where cool season and warm season lawns grow both, and that's where the trouble is.
All right. Well, I'll cut me up a piece and take it down to the nursery then and see what they say.
All right. Great. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Yep. And now let's head over to Liz's yard, and she lives in Clayton. Hi, Liz.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Very good.
I am growing a lot of sun gold tomatoes. However, now they're getting split. Am I giving them too much water or too little water? Or what is that?
And it also might be are you using regular tomato food?
Probably, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So because, it's going to have some nutrients that prevent some of these problems.
Okay, so I have so many, I'm afraid to add too much fertilizer to them or food, because I don't think my squirrels aren't even eating them anymore. They're so full.
Oh, really?
So nutrients, but it's not necessarily a water issue.
If the plants are healthy and everything, then it's not a water issue. If the plants are,
they're doing fine. So, okay, thank you, Mike, so much, and thanks for having our show for us.
Sure, well, thank you.
Bye.
And let's go over to Joanne's yard. Hi, Joanne.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a problem with zinnias. I have some in a pot on my patio, and the leaves have been looking kind of wilty, and they have like a white film on the leaves. I don't know if that's called powdery mildew or something like that?
You're absolutely right. It's powdery mildew. It's more of an aesthetic problem than anything else. So it doesn't overly affect the actual production of the zinnia flowers or anything along that line.
I see. What causes that?
It's an airborne fungus. I mean, lots of different plants get it, perennial-wise, annual-wise. I mean, lilacs get it, too, so it's just one of those kind of chronic problems every year that you're going to experience.
I've never had it before. I've had zinnias before,
right,
and they never had that problem, just didn't know.
Yeah, this year the weather was just perfect for right in your yard where these are growing in their pot.
I see. And is there anything you can do about it?
Not as a preventative. There really isn't.
Okay. Just put up with it.
Exactly. Unfortunately.
It didn't seem to affect the flowers themselves.
Right.
It's just the leaves that look like that.
Right. That's why I said it's more of an aesthetic problem than it is a physical problem that impacts the plant material in general.
I see. Okay. I plant the zinnias because I'm trying to attract hummingbirds.
Ah.
But I have a feeder, and they go to the feeder more than they go to the zinnias.
Yeah, the zinnias are not exactly their favorite.
What would be their favorite?
Plant-wise, let's say I don't know if you have shade or shady area or anything like that, but I have, in the sun, I have lantana, and it's kind of a shrubby-type perennial, annual-type thing, and that's about, I don't have a hummingbird feeder, but that's the only plant I see them going to.
What is the name of that plant?
Lantana, Lantana.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll see if I can get some of that.
Thank you
very much for your help. I appreciate it.
Sure, and I'll tell you another plant that I used to, that I'm not growing this year that I grow a lot is hyacinth, H-Y-C-I-N-T-H, hyacinth bean, B-E-A-N, vine, V-I-N-E. It's an annual vine, and it's in the pea family. Spectacular, purplish flowers that the hummingbirds love, and then it gets purplish bean pods
when they
get pollinated.
Okay, hyacinth zina?
Hyacinth bean, B-E-A-N.
Oh, V-E-A-N.
B-E-A-N.
Okay.
B-E-A-N, okay. Like a brother, and then hyacinth is a vine.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
Sure, my pleasure. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, I realize it's a little warm to be working outside, but with your annuals and your perennials, keep deadheading them. I mean, with the annuals, it will certainly encourage new blooms, but with the perennials, it just makes it so they don't really waste a lot of energy on spent flowers. And after another couple weeks, August 15th, do not fertilize your roses at all. And here's something related to that powdery mildew. Powdery mildew on lilacs, phlox, zinnias is unsightly but causes no harm or rarely warrants control. Now, this is from the University of Missouri Extension Service. They put out a newsletter every month. So that's some of the quotes from them. Let's go over to Collins. Colin, how are you?
Good.
Go ahead.
Yep. Yeah, I've got two questions. One, I've got bottom rot on my tomatoes. The tomatoes are 6 foot tall and loaded with tomatoes, but as soon as they get ripe, the bottom third of them are just black and rotten.
Right. What you have is the fertilizer you used did not have calcium in it. So blossom end rot is a result of no calcium in your fertilizer or in your soil.
Okay, that was cow manure.
Ha ha. No, won't have calcium.
What's that?
It won't have calcium.
Okay, so how do I add calcium? Can you get granulated calcium there?
Yeah, I guess you could, or just get a fertilizer specifically for tomatoes because it's going to have calcium as part of the micronutrients.
Okay. My second question is, we have a tulip poplar tree that last year the leaves turned black and kind of a moldy look on it.
Right.
It nearly looked like it was dying. It's come back out this year. Is that something that will happen again?
It could. What that was is you have an insect, probably like aphids, feeding on it. And as the aphids stick their, let's say, proboscis or needle nose in there to sort of drink the sap of the leaf, when they pull it back out, it leaves a little dewdrop. Now, that dewdrop then it can get moldy. So that's what it is, a result of insects being on the leaves of your plant and causing this to happen.
Okay. Just need to be sprayed with something? Or?
Yeah. I don't know how big the tree is or anything else because it's pretty difficult to spray big trees. But
right.
It is related to insects feeding on the leaves. And it doesn't, they're going to hurt the leaves to a certain point. But that's what causes this black fungus stuff on that particular okay. tree's foliage.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure. My pleasure. And now let's see. Where should we go? Let's go over to O'Fallon and go into Barbara's yard. Hi, Barbara.
Hello.
Hi.
We planted two tomato plants, and right now they are getting real yellow leaves with tiny black spots, and I did see a real little insect of some kind on one of the stems, and I went to a nursery. They recommended copper fungicide. I've used that once, but it looks like it's still spreading to the other leaves, and the very bottom stem has almost looks like cotton that's been pulled and real thin on the stem.
Little pieces?
Not just pieces, like the whole stem.
Oh, well, I would say your tomatoes are just not in good shape. So
okay.
This late in the season, there's really not anything that you're going to be able to do. Do you know which variety this was?
Yes, one was Early Girl.
Okay.
And we've had one red tomato, one's turning red, and there's a lot of other tomatoes on that. And the other one is beefsteak, and the same with it.
Right.
The tomatoes look small, but they are in clusters, almost like grapes, instead of just one here and there.
Right. Because, those varieties that you got are ones that are resistant to a lot of the problems. So that's, I wanted to make sure that you did get, named varieties. Are these in the ground or in a pot?
No, they are in a raised bed, and the bed goes down to like a funnel. By funnel, it's that, like a V shape.
Okay. That shouldn't be a problem. I would say, if you want to fool around with them for the rest of this year, you can, but it's going to be a lot of work, and you're probably, the rewards that you're going to get is not going to be worth the effort, from my perspective. But certainly, you could go ahead and try, but it sounds like, if copper fungicide on it and you saw an insect, so that was, kind of two different things.
Okay.
And so if you do see insects, just, get insecticidal soap and spray them directly on any of the insects that you might see. Because a lot of times, some of the problems can be spread by insects that are feeding along, stems or leaves or whatever it happens to be.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, I'm getting tired of messing with them.
Yeah, I would say give up.
In the beginning, I did buy Fruit-A-Loom blooming and rooting plant food. It had a picture of a tomato on it.
Okay, that's, you know, you did everything you could, but I mean, with the goofy weather and everything that we've had this year, it's made certain circumstances in individuals' homes or, you know, gardens or whatever it happens to be, not be as successful as they should be.
Okay. So just leave it alone and see if the tomatoes do turn red?
Right.
Okay.
I mean, keep watering and everything. Keep it as much healthy as you possibly can. But beyond that, I wouldn't do too much.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure. My pleasure. Now let's head over to Lou's yard. Hi, Lou.
Good morning.
Hi.
I have a problem with one of my peony bushes that's been in the ground for probably 20 years. I'm used to seeing some mildew on them this time of the year.
Right.
But this year, I don't know whether it's mildew. It looks kind of grayish. And I'm assuming, because the leaves look like dead, I'm assuming I need to cut it back. But I'm worried about the implications for next year. Will it come back?
It shouldn't have a problem. Just make sure that if you cut the leaves off, that you get them out of there. Just don't cut them and let them drop right in that spot, because you could have knocked with those leaves that have the fungus or whatever, the powdery mildew or whatever it happens to be, on them. If they just lay there, then those spores are going to drop into the ground, and then next year when the new foliage comes up from the ground, from the root system, it can pick those spores right back up again. So that's where you got to be very cautious and, you know, be careful and clean it, you know, keep everything clean. But they shouldn't.
Okay.
If they looked, you know, overall healthy, you know, up until, I'm assuming they flowered and everything, up until this part of the season, this is a time where they kind of go dormant anyway.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. So just keep everything clean and you shouldn't have a problem. And now let's go over to Dave's yard. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Mike. I also have a fungus problem. I have a fungus in my yard, and I've had it for most years it comes on pretty strong, and I try treating it and doing various things to help it, but it seems to come back. I mean, early in the spring, my yard was like perfect, and
sure.
Now probably 25% of it has been destroyed with this fungus. I use the grass is a tall fescue, and it's a varieties. I've tried, you know, three or four different types of grass seeds from St. Louis vendors that are a mixture of fescues. I'm not overwatering it. I've been very careful this year, to even though, you know, we've had a lot of rain and stuff, but I
Right.
try not to do any extra watering that isn't absolutely mandatory. I've only fertilized the yard once with Milorganite. I cut the grass tall every year, or, you know, every time. And I've been treating it with two products. One is the Scott's Disease X, and one is the BioAdvantage Fungus Control. And I've been overdosing those based on some stuff I've read online. Do you have any idea what I can do that I haven't already done, or what I can do to prevent this from coming back next year?
Yeah, if you've had a history of this going back multiple years, now, as far as these fungicides, how often are you reapplying them?
Well, every 2 to 4 weeks.
Boy, you're doing everything that you could or should. You know, so that's.
I know. I've been researching it, and I've been trying to hit it with everything.
Right.
Does the fungus, like, live in the soil? I know in the past I've had, like, in patients that were killed by a fungus and I couldn't plant there for, you know, 5 years or something.
Right. That could be a possibility, but have you ever core aerated?
Yeah.
So you've core aerated and put some compost down. You've done everything you possibly can. To me, it sounds like this particular spot in your lawn is just overly compacted and, you know, I mean, when you mow or anything else, the blades sit there. They kind of re-inoculate it for next year. I'm assuming you're dethatching. You're doing everything you possibly can.
I haven't dethatched. Should I do that? I don't really have a lot of thatch, but I haven't dethatched.
Well, I would still give it a, you know, you don't have to get a machine or anything. Just use a leaf rake and really, you know, rake it heavy, especially the area that has this damage. If it's in the same spot year in, year out.
Yeah, it's pretty much spread across my whole yard, and my neighbors don't have it. So now my neighbors don't have the greatest grass.
Right.
And I had really nice grass, and obviously it goes to the, you know, the nicer stuff gets it hit first.
But, sure, absolutely.
Can if I do like a soil test, can they detect anything? I've done other soil tests, but should I do a soil test of the areas?
Well, it wouldn't hurt because what that's going to do is going to show you maybe you have a high level of, you know, potassium or a high level of this or a high level of that, or your pH may be a little bit high or may be a little bit low. So it's going to show you some of the background information of what's going on in the ground right there and or throughout your entire yard. But, you know, I mean, what you're experiencing is what people do with cool season lawns is they always look great, you know, when the weather's cool, but then they start going down, potentially going downhill. And even though the fescues are more resistant than some of the others varieties, but still they have their own problems.
Yeah. Is there any other variety of, I mean, I've liked the narrow blade, but maybe I just can't handle that, you know. Is there something else I should be overseeding with to kind of get something else
no.
in there besides it?
Fescue blend is the best thing you can do.
Okay. Okay. So maybe dethatch it lightly this fall and do a soil test.
Right.
If I have, like, too high a, I don't know, whatever
pH
pH or whatever, is that make things like this happen more likely? I mean, you know, does
it kind of sets a stage up where, and especially if you have a history of it.
Yeah, I definitely have a history. I mean, 1 year about took the whole yard out.
Whoa.
Now I wasn't treating it. I hadn't been in it as diligent in those years as I am now, but it's still really bad. So let me try those two things.
All right.
I appreciate your help.
All right. Thanks, Jason.
Okay.
Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Back to the phones we go, and let's go over to Jason's yard, and Jason lives in O'Fallon. Hi, Jason.
Hey, good morning, Mike. Thanks. I have a hillside that faces the sun, and I had a bunch of little holes in it, looked like little caves or something, and I thought, I don't know what they were, frogs or what. But I think now that they may be voles or, you know, field mice. So I'd like to know what your recommendations would be on addressing that. And then along that hillside, I also have sprayed that back. There was a lot of ground cover and miscellaneous ivy. And now I need to put just one consistent ivy or something in there on that hillside. Again, it's too steep to mow, so I wanted your ideas. Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, first of all, if it's really steep and it's south-facing, I would not use ivy. It's a little bit too hot. It can handle it, but it's not going to do all that well. I'd take a look at something called liriope or monkey grass and get the variety spicata. So liriope spicata, it's a spreading type of ground cover. It's, you know, pretty invasive and everything else. Either that or some of the varieties of sedums, S-E-D-U-M. There's several different varieties of sedum. But these holes you're talking about, I don't know if you stuck anything down into the hole to see how deep they were, because it may not be, you know, I mean, if it was mice or voles or something, and you say there's a considerable amount of them, you would see them. I mean, it's not like they're going to sneak out and only go when you're not out in the backyard or anything else. And if that's the case, then you got some really smart mammals in your yard. But I would say, you know, try to figure out what those holes are, because they could be problematic for anything that you're going to be putting in there. And if you're going to do a new ground cover in this space, you're going to have to improve the soil. And I know that's going to be tough. So basically what you need to do is start at the bottom and work your way up the hill. That way, by starting at the bottom, you're not going to have erosion and things like that. So don't try to do it all at once as far as planting goes. But again, liriope, L-I-R-I-O-P-E, and you want the variety spicata. That's the one that's a ground cover. That's the one they use, like, at the botanical garden in the English, or in the Japanese garden. And the sedum, S-E-D-U-M, there's multiple varieties of sedum. Probably try to find one of the ones that is an evergreen-type sedum. So, like, sedum palace purple or something along that line. So it's going to be a tough job. Mike Miller, KM West Garden Hotline. I will see you after the news.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, and it is a tip of the trowel hour, and I'll be giving that shortly. But right now, you can give us a call at 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with your ideas, questions, concerns, or comments. And Mr. Kelly, before you take off,
yes,
can I ask you something related to the news?
Yeah.
Now, why would we have people in the city of St. Louis and St. Louis County wear masks, but Madison County, St. Charles County, Jefferson County, any of those surrounding areas don't have to? I don't understand.
Well, it's just city and county officials are kind of working together on this, St. Louis city and county, and the other counties are all working on it on their own more so.
Ah.
And so city and county, the mayors and the county executive and their health leaders are kind of all teaming up to work on this, whereas the other ones are on their own.
Okay.
So I talked to Steve Ellman yesterday. He's the county executive in St. Charles County.
Uh-huh.
They never had a mask mandate. And he said that their rates, hospitalization and death rates, were half of what St. Louis County and city were. So he doesn't think a mask mandate is necessary or even works. He's not convinced that it would work. The city and county folks have a different point of view. They say it absolutely helps prevent the spread wearing masks.
Right.
So that's why there's the difference.
Okay.
There.
I just couldn't quite figure that out because, I mean, well, this is a huge metropolitan area and only two sort of locations. That doesn't, you know, it didn't make sense.
Right.
Now it does.
Yeah. So.
Great. Thanks for your insight.
You're welcome.
Yes, folks, and thanks for having me on your show. We can discuss plant selections, cares for, ups and downs and all arounds, annuals, bulbs, edibles, ground covers, house plants, lawns, perennials, roses, trees, shrubs, vines, or water gardens. I'll share my thoughts, but please remember my answers, comments, or opinions is not the only garden path to take to have success, but strictly offer for you to consider. Across the big board is Alex. He's producing, so he answers the phone. He just needs your first name and where you're calling from. During the week, I spend time doing landscape consulting, which I call walk and talks, and I do them on the weekends, too. So, again, today I'm headed out to Town and Country and going to meet with the people at Sunset Landscape and take a look at the yard and see what's going on there. And they're going to be working on this particular landscape, and they just wanted my insight. Anyway. If you'd like to schedule a walk and talk, you can go to my phone. Well, you can go to my website, and then that's where my email address and phone number is. And I'll come to your home and share 40-plus years of experience. Tip of the trowel is a special recognition for individuals, groups, or situations that's made an impression on me and is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Tip of the trowel goes out. This is a really tough time of year, but all the drivers of the trash trucks, recycle trucks, and everything else. I mean, it is so hot, and it's such a tough job. You know, I live in the city, so in the alley, we've got all these huge dumpsters and everything else. But tip of the trowel goes out to all the drivers for all the refuse department and recycling department and yard waste department and everything else. And so, I mean, I admire these guys. They go up and down, and, I mean, they are just unbelievable. These narrow streets and narrow alleys and everything else. So I greatly appreciate all their work, and that's why I gave them the tip of the trowel. So let's go ahead and get a call or two in before we take a break. Let's go over to Jackie's yard. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I have two 63-year-old pin oaks in my front yard. And the one has those gall wasps on it.
Right.
What's the chance of me keeping them?
Well, I mean, you can just let them go. I mean, it can be problematic from the standpoint once you get so many galls on it, it could cause some stress fractures, and then water can run down the limb or the trunk or whatever it happens to be and get into the, let's say, the interior of the tree and cause problems that way. I mean, there's injection systems, but it takes about 2 years or so after you get the tree injected before the actual chemical that you're having injected with makes it to the top that could cause some deterrence for, you know, the wasp and everything else. So I would say you probably it's to roll the dice. Let's put it this way. And I wouldn't
now,
be
the ground, the dirt that has nothing to do with it. My soil, right?
Nothing. Whatsoever.
Nothing. Okay. See, I did take a soil sample. There was an article in the paper last weekend about this, and they said take a soil sample, you know, to your conservation. And I did go to Kirkwood, and they told me I should have someone come out and look at the trees.
Right.
Not to waste my money with a soil sample.
Yeah, why is soil? For somebody to say take a soil sample, that makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah, that was in the gardening question and answer of last Sunday.
Oh, really?
The Botanical Garden.
Ah, ooh.
Yeah.
PU.
Yeah. They said your best thing is to go and get a soil sample. Yeah.
Oh my.
Right. So,
that's sad.
I thank you very, very much. And I was listening to you many years ago when you had your problem, and I'm glad you are healthy.
Oh, but my seizure? Yeah, I still take medicine for my epilepsy.
Well, I'm glad, and I listen every Saturday. I'm 88 years old, but I was listening when that happened that time.
Wow,
so,
that was a
long time ago. So
yeah.
Thank you very, very much for every Saturday, okay?
Well, great. Well, thank you. Yeah, that was 1998. Well, I guess I'm still okay. No, I'm okay because I take my medicine, as much as I hate medicine. But anyway, let's go over to Kathy's yard now. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I have several pockets of my yard that's hard to get my mower in, so I was thinking that I would put bulbs in this fall that come up in the spring and just have that vegetation there, and wondered your thoughts on that and what your tips would be.
Well, you can put bulbs there, and they will come up, and they will flower, and they will have foliage, but then that dies off.
I thought the foliage would stay around.
Mean like for daffodils and tulips and things like that?
Yes. Uh-huh.
No, they last for probably after they finish flowering, maybe up to a month, maybe 5 weeks at the most.
Oh, well, shoot. I'm still looking for areas, those little pockets that are hard to get to.
Right. So just, I mean, realign your bed space, and that would certainly, you know, solve your problem. Make it so, use your mower to find, you know, the nice, easy curve, and just improve that soil, and then you can put some ground covers, perennials, or, you know, other things besides the bulbs in there, and then just have it filled with that kind of stuff.
Yeah. All right. Very good. I appreciate your show, and thanks for taking my call today.
Sure. My pleasure. And now let's go over to Adam's yard, and he lives in Belleville. Hi, Adam.
Hey, Mike. Good morning.
Good morning.
I've got a bunch of iris plants in my backyard. Obviously, they're done flowering. I'm wondering how I can kind of trim back the foliage because they're really quite big and getting a little overgrown looking.
Yeah, this is the time of year when you want to do it. You can cut them back, you know, back to about 3 inches or so.
The entire plant just kind of clear across the top?
Exactly. So, like, give it a crew cut, more or less.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good to know.
And that's all you really need to do.
Nice. That's easy. I love it. I also wanted to say thanks for the show. I've got my raised bed mix from STL Composting just the other day, and my wife's like, where'd you get that from, and how'd you hear about it? I'm like, I listen to the Garden Hotline on the radio. She's like, you're 29 years old. Why are you listening to gardening radio? But anyway,
that's a
good
one.
I appreciate the show. It's very insightful.
Well, great. Well, thanks. Greatly appreciate
it. Thank you so much.
Yep. And for anybody that has any azaleas or rhododendrons in your landscape, or holly, or any broadleaf evergreen, even boxwood, if you start to see pale green, the leaves turning pale green or, you know, almost to a yellow, what that means is your soil pH is bad. And what you're going to have to do is probably get a soil test done to find out exactly what's going on with the pH. That's the relativity of, let's say, vinegar versus salt. So that's kind of the azalea is like a vinegar kind of soil, not a salty one. Lilac's like salty. Vinegar is for azaleas, hollies, and things like that. So you're going to have to make some changes as a result of that. Also, there are some insects that can cause a yellowing, but for the most part, it's usually the soil pH. So Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Back to the phones we go, and let's see, where should we go? Let's go over to Marty's yard. Hi, Marty.
Good morning, Mike.
Hi.
I have a beautiful area of purple coneflowers. They are the pink, purple in color.
Uh-huh.
And some of them are turning green. The whole thing turns green. And in the cone part of the flower, there are things that pop out of it that look like small, miniature little coneflowers. Is this a problem, or is there a disease, or what's going on with that?
No, that's just a natural, you know, sort of process.
Do I need to pull those out?
No, they're fine.
No. Okay, thank you.
So one question, I have a bunch of coneflowers too, and some of the hard rains this particular year had really beat them down, so I've had to put some supports around them to keep them more vertical. Did you have any problems with that?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
I have been propping them up
because
the wind, especially a couple weeks ago when we had a bad storm, really flattened a lot of them.
Yeah, exactly. So now what's happening is just the process and why it's not happening to all. And it's just, you know, one of those quirky things that you never know what the answer is.
Okay. Well, the pollinators love them. So,
oh, yeah,
it's great.
And then the finches will, you know, another month or so, the finches will be all over the place eating the seed.
Yes, yes. So it's, you can walk by them and you can just hear a hum,
right,
which is kind of nice.
Right, exactly.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's go over to Russell's yard. Hi, Russell.
Hey, how you doing?
Very good.
Hey, my question is, I've got a Bradford pear, and last year and this year, for some reason, at the same time, the leaves start to turn black in the center.
Ooh.
And then, like right now, I've lost about 20% of the foliage on the Bradford pear.
Right.
Any ideas?
Yeah, it's got a disease that's going to kill it. It's called fire blight. And once it gets in the vascular system, it's, you know, transmitted by various beetles and things like that from a tree that has a problem. Then they come to your tree and they can inoculate your tree with walking, you know, where there's any kind of, let's say, fissure or crack or something like that where sap, and then once it gets inside, there's nothing that can be done for fire blight. Bradford pears, crab apples, several hawthorns, lots of different trees get the fire blight, and that's pretty much it. You don't have to necessarily take the tree down.
How do you spell that? How do you spell that?
Fire, F-I-R-E.
Okay.
Fire blight, B-L-I-G-H-T.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, I'll do, eventually, it's just going to die.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
And
okay,
leave it alone, you think, well, what difference does it make? But what can happen is if the beetles or insects that can transmit the disease can affect other plants besides, like I said, the Bradford pear. So that's kind of the advantage of just getting it taken out because you already know it's got a problem that's going to send it downhill.
Okay. Okay, thank you for your service.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's see. Virginia, how are you today?
I'm fine. How are you?
Very good.
Several weeks ago, a lady called in and she had a problem growing azaleas. And you suggested a flowering evergreen. What was the name of that plant?
Ooh. That's kind of, I don't remember exactly what plant, I would recommend.
It was a flowering evergreen that you suggested she plant instead of the azalea.
I'd have to think about that. Let's see. Flowering evergreen. Oh, probably it was a PJM rhododendron.
Okay.
So what that is just a stronger variety of rhododendron. It flowers a little bit earlier. It's not the classic rhododendron size foliage or anything, but they seem to be a lot more tough and a lot more durable than what the what the regular rhododendrons are. So it's just the letters P, J, M. So Peter, John, Michael.
Oh, PJM, rhododendron.
Right.
Okay. Thank you so much for your help.
Sure, my pleasure. And let's see now. Joe lives in South County. Hi, Joe.
Hello. Thanks for the service.
Sure.
For bees, this year I planted some bachelor button flowers, and the bees loved them, right?
Right.
Absolutely loved them. But I have a question about pineapple. I'm thinking about growing some pineapple. And I was reading it's pretty simple. Just cut off the top and trim the fruit off and plant it. But do I put it in a container? Do I put it straight into the garden? How can I do that?
Well, it can't grow. It has to be in a pot, and you have to bring it inside for the wintertime.
Okay.
So
I get it.
Yeah. So it's pretty easy to do. I mean, you're not going to. I mean, let's. You can ultimately get a pineapple, but to get a pineapple that's going to be full-size edible is probably going to be impossible. But it's kind of fun to watch them grow anyway.
Yeah, it said it might grow to 5 feet in height. Like, okay, I could probably put that in my garage or my basement. Anything higher than that would be a trouble.
Yeah, 5 feet, that's going to be, you're looking at about 30 years. I'm exaggerating, but in this weather and everything else, even if you have it underneath grow lights and in perfect conditions, you're not going to see it, 5 feet for a long, long, long time.
Well, I have a rubber tree plant that's 27 years old.
All right. Well,
I have potential for longevity.
All right. Sounds perfect.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Sure. My pleasure. Yeah. I forget whose house it was that, they had been growing pineapples for a couple years, and actually they had a pineapple. It was on the stalk coming out of the original cutting that they made from the top of the pineapple fruit. And the pineapple was probably like the size of a maybe tennis ball, and it was like probably 10 years old or something. And the stalk was probably like maybe 3 feet. But, she was never going to get, let's say, edible pineapple. But it's just fun to grow kind of oddball things. Let's go now over to Nick's yard. Hi, Nick.
How you doing?
Very good.
I need to ask a question concerning a sweet gumball tree. We've got this big, beautiful tree in the backyard, but it puts out so many sweet gumballs that thousands and thousands of them. Is there any way to sterilize that tree to keep it from putting balls out or producing the balls?
Basically, there's a product called Florel. It was developed in Southern California because they have a lot of olive trees as street trees, so they spray them to prevent the olive trees from producing olives. So, but then they found out it worked on sweet gum trees. The problem is it has to be sprayed every year. It doesn't have a long-term impact. So when it's in flower, and you're probably going to have a tree service come out ahead of time, before the leaves even come out, and to let you know when it's in flower, because most people don't even notice that it's in, sweet gums are in flower. But that's when it has to be sprayed. What it does is just interrupt that pollination of the flower, so consequently you don't get any sweet gum balls for that year only.
What was the name of the chemical?
F-L-O-R-E-L, Florel.
Florel. And is it something you can buy locally, or do I have to have a tree service?
Yeah, you'll probably have to have a tree service come because they got to spray. I mean, you got to spray the whole tree, basically. And you don't have a sprayer, I'm sure, that can get it. I don't know how big your tree is, but it sounds like if you got 1,000 sweet gum balls, you got a big tree.
Yeah, it is a big tree.
Yeah. So.
All right. That answers my question.
Great.
It can't be stopped.
Nope. Sorry. There's nothing that could sterilize a tree permanently other than having it removed. And let's see. Now let's go. Well, let's go over to Glenn's yard. Glenn is from Steelville. Hi, Glenn.
Hello.
Hi.
I had my yard sprayed last spring. And how long do I have to wait before I can put grass in there?
What'd you have? You had it sprayed with what?
Yeah, for weeds.
Oh, basically, depends upon what chemical they, you know, what chemical they use. But usually it's any place between 2 and 4 weeks afterwards. Now, to put grass seed down this time of year is really kind of a waste of energy and everything else. You might as well wait for another, you know, month or so until mid to late August and put the seed down then. Putting right. seed down during the heat of this summer, July, is really extremely difficult.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep, my pleasure. Mike Miller, KMR's Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, with your cool season lawn, in other words, your bluegrass or your fescue, mow frequently enough to compensate for the growth. So what you want to do is set your mower a little bit higher and probably like 3.5 inches or so, and cut and mow enough where the clippings that after you mow are only about an inch. Then if it's a non-watered or stressed lawn, it may not grow at all this time of year. So consequently, if it's not growing, do not mow. So don't set, well, let's see, maybe I can just set my blades low, my mower blade lower and just cut it. Don't do that. That's going to cause major problems that you already have because it's not growing. Anyway, let's go over to Mike Shard. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Very good.
Hey, I got a question. I had the same lawn service guy for the last 3 years, and I got zoysia grass. Could he be doing something that it's killing the zoysia? I mean, it, I got bare spots. Unbelievable now.
Whoa. Well, I don't know. You know, I hate to say it, but sometimes people mowing, does he mow your grass?
No, I do all the mowing, and, you know, I do exactly what you say. I set my mower high. Nothing's changed in the last 3 years.
Okay. Probably he's not doing anything, and your zoysia may be just old, or also realize that when you mow your grass over these brown spots, you could be actually spreading, you know, this problem around because you don't. I'm sure you don't clean the underside of your mower after you mow.
Exactly.
So okay, I mean, that's a way that you know, a problem can be spread. I would, if this guy seems like he knows what he's doing, I can't, you know, I can't really blame him. But I'm not there. I can't see. I don't know what he's put down or anything else. But how old is your zoysia lawn?
Well, I've been there 22 years, and I've added plugs throughout, you know, the years.
Okay.
But nothing major.
Well, I mean, you're doing everything you possibly could, so, and you're fertilizing it, correct? He's fertilizing?
Well, he does all that. That's what he does.
Okay, so maybe, you know, might ask him what kind of fertilizer he's putting down, and you might get a soil test done just to see in relationship to the, what it'll do is it will tell you if you have extravagant levels of some chemical that you would be, you know, from the fertilizer. So he may be putting a fertilizer down that could be problematic from the standpoint that every time he's putting, let's say, a 5, 15, 15 down. So the second two numbers of phosphorus and potassium, if your soil is saying, we've got a lot of that, we don't need any more, then he's got to change the formula that he's putting down for your fertilizer.
Okay. I was going to call him this week, and I thought, well, I'll just wait and talk to you first and then call him.
Yeah. But, I mean, you can get a soil test done. I don't know where you live, but Belleville, there's a private company that does soil testing. So
I live in Granite City.
Okay, well, I don't think the University
of Belleville.
Yeah, University of Illinois. But just look online for local companies that will do soil testing for you.
Okay, hey, and I thank you very much. You have a great day.
You do the same thing. And now let's go to Redbud and into Jason's yard. Hi, Jason.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So the other day I was out mowing my grass, and all of a sudden I felt a pop, and then followed by two other pops, two stings. Look back, and I want to say they were bumblebees. So So I wanted to see what the best, you know, we got some spray, but I hate to kill things, especially pollinators like that.
Right.
I just wondered if you had any suggestions on, so they're in the ground, and I can't mow my yard now, so I got to do something. I just wanted to see what your thoughts are.
Bumblebees, do they live in the ground? Are you sure it wasn't a ground hornet?
Was it? Maybe it was a hornet.
Right. My guess is probably a ground hornet. So if you can find the holes, I mean, I'm not saying you should, but you can inject some insecticide down into the hole. But I don't think bumblebees live in the ground. I could be wrong.
Okay. But no matter what, in that case, if it's something that, whatever it is, if it's in the ground like that, in order to mow, I mean, it comes down to you just got to get rid of them, right?
Pretty much. I mean, ground hornets are vicious, too. They bite and sting both. So that's kind of the bad side of those characters.
Okay. Well, that's what we were thinking. The other question I had real quick for you, Mike, is stumps. So we have probably about 20 stumps on our property that I'm trying to figure out the best way to get rid of them. And, you know, I went on YouTube and there's 100 different ways it sounds like you can do it. But in your experience, what's the best way to get rid of stumps?
Basically, I mean, you're not going to accelerate the process that much to get rid of them. It's going to take a couple years. Stump grinding is obviously one way, but it doesn't get rid of all the, let's say, lateral root systems as a result of it. But there's, you know, there's products called stump rot where you drill holes into the stump and then pour this, you know, product into it. But it's still going to be a long, involved process to actually get rid of the stump entirely.
So you just kind of bite the bullet, get a couple of chainsaws and go down as deep as you can and then just let them rot out from
there. Right, because, I mean, that'll rot, but then, like I said, the lateral roots, you know, off the stump, you know, the old trunk, they could stay viable for, you know, even after the tree's been cut down for 3 to 5 years. Each year they're going to, you know, implode a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more, so they're going to be less aggressive to anything that you're trying to grow in that area.
You know, it's weird on some of them along our lakefront that has a probably like a 45 slope. There's a lot of big holes in those trunk areas, like around the tree trunk areas. And I don't know if that's holes that are probably... oh, almost a foot in diameter.
Good Lord.
And I don't know if it's washing out underneath through the trunk into the lake, or if it's something that's actually, you know, burying or boring those out, you know, like some sort of animal. I don't know.
Yeah, my guess is it's some kind of natural type thing, not being an animal.
Okay. Well, I could sit there and ask you a million questions, Mike. We really appreciate your show. It gets us very excited about working in the yard on the weekends.
Well, great. Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And now let's go over to Dennis's yard. Hi, Dennis.
Hey, Mike. Listen, my daisies in the front came up beautiful and everything. Then the rabbits ate all the white petals off.
Oh.
So I just cut back all the... you know, center brown centers that were left. Did I do the right thing?
Sure, that's fine. I mean, you're growing them for aesthetics, so if you don't get the aesthetics, to do that, you should probably cut them back a little bit more to try to encourage another flush.
Well, they might bloom again this summer?
Right.
Okay, one other question. I have two small, miniature pines or whatever that I had on each side of the door. And I left them in the container that they came in and put them in a bigger pot and filled around it with mulch, like you said, to keep it. They're about 3 years old, and now some of the things turning brown. Did I water it too much, or is it the sun or what?
Well, it could be that. As far as turning brown, is it the side that's next to the house?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, then that's because there's no sun over there. So that's just a natural process of planting things, you know, whether they're in pots or in the ground, close to houses. Things like Alberta spruce or conifers or lots of different things cannot do well as far as keeping the needles green if they're not getting light.
Will they come back if I turn it toward the sun?
No. Basically, once they're green, once they were green and then they turn brown, there is no viable buds there that can produce any more needles.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, back to the phones, and let's go over to Carol's yard. Hi, Carol.
Hi. Oh, thank you for my call. I have, and it's spreading rapidly in my lawn. There's three small leaves, very long-rooted system. And I've never seen the weed before. I notice it in other people's lawns, and it's spreading. Do you have any idea what it could be?
It's tough with just your description to know exactly what it is. Let's see.
Okay, it's each leaf would have three very small leaves.
Okay, it's probably black medic. It's probably, does it look like clover a little bit?
Yes.
Okay, so it's black medic. It has a yellow flower.
How do you spell that? Black what?
Medic, M-E-D-I-C.
Oh, okay, just like medic, okay.
Right, and what you need to do is just get a like a Weed Be Gone or a broadleaf weed killer and just spray it on that.
Okay, now will that propagate, keep propagating? It's taken over almost my whole lawn.
Yeah,
I have tried 7 concentrate. But boy, that just eats the whole area away.
Yeah, seven's not an herbicide. Seven's an insecticide.
Oh, okay.
So
I need a herbicide.
Yes. So that's why Weed Be Gone or anything that kills broadleaf weeds.
Okay. And then when do I use that?
ASAP, but just read the label first related to temperatures and things like that, because a lot of times you can cause more problems by spraying when it's too hot or it's too this or it's too that.
Okay.
So just read the label and then do the application according to when the label's, you know, advises.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much, sir. Have a great one.
Sure, thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Let's head over to Lori's yard. Hi, Lori.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a peace lily, and she's not in bloom now, like with the statuous look. But at the core, where she started to blossom again, where the new growth is coming up,
mm-hmm.
once they come up, before those leaves can start to unfurl, the tips are turning brown. I moved it to a bigger pot at one time because it was outgrowing the pot with the long roots.
Right.
And she was fine. And then with this hot weather and stuff, even though I had her inside, she's still turning that brown before the leaves unfurl and flourish.
So you're talking about the petal, not the leaves, the white petal?
It's not the petal. There's no flowers on it. This is all the new growth that's coming out of the ground.
Right.
It gets about maybe 3 to 4 inches high, and the leaf gets ready to unfurl. But she's turning brown right at the tip before it even unfurls. And if I keep watering it, I'm afraid of root rot.
Right, exactly. Probably what you should do is pull it out of the pot, shake all the potting mix off of it you possibly can, and then repot it with brand new potting mix.
Okay. All right. Then I don't have to add anything like a fertilizer or anything.
No, not initially. No, just you shouldn't do anything, and then just wait until you start to see some new growth. Then fertilize at that time. But initially, just get rid of all the existing potting mix, potting soil, whatever there is around the root system. Even if you have to, take in the basement or outside and hose all that stuff off the root system, and then repot it.
Okay, I appreciate it, because you should have seen when I took her out of the old pot, the roots were so long.
Right.
They just looked like somebody had pulled a clump of grass out of my yard. So I thank you very much.
Sure, my
Maybe
pleasure.
I can save her. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And now let's go over to Peggy's yard. Hi, Peggy.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We've got a hardy, exotic banana tree. And it's doing pretty good, but now it's got a lot of new growth around the base of it.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of looks like toes growing all over. Should we leave those or cut them off? Or could you even cut them off and, like, replant them by letting them get some and put them in water to get root hairs on them?
I probably wouldn't put them in water, but I'd put them in, like, a potting mix if you want to cut them off and put them in a potting mix for starting plant material, and put, then sink that pot into the ground where this other hardy variety is, you know, the mother plant is growing.
Okay. Yeah, that's what we weren't sure about since our first year to have this. But it's, you know, it's doing pretty good. Some of the leaves get torn, but that's just normal, I think, with the wind and everything.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, also, I have some hydrangea bushes, and one of them has gotten so many flowers on it. Now, this, you know, a fall, when if I cut some of that off, will I not have flowers on those areas then?
No, it's a summer flower, and you can prune it all the way up until the new growth, in other words, just the leaves, start in the springtime. So you got all the way through the fall and through, you know, most of the wintertime to get your pruning done.
Oh, okay. All righty. Okay, well, thank you. Have a nice day.
Sure, same to you. And, Ralph, could you do it quickly?
Sure can. Mike, I got this oak tree, and it's about 40 years old. And the leaves are falling off, branches falling off, but it looks healthy. It doesn't look like it's there. What's causing that?
It's probably a lot of squirrels are doing it. So just look at anything that's fallen onto the ground and see if the angle, the cut on the stem where the leaves are, is like at a 45-degree angle. If it is, then it's due to squirrels.
But it's just about all the trees in the subdivision, the oak trees, are doing that. It looks like they're shedding. They have any fall shedding before early.
Yeah, but it's not. It's squirrels all over my neighborhood. All the oak trees are having this happen for the most part. So it's just.
Thank you. That's all I need to know.
All right, great. Well, thanks a lot. Mike Miller, KMY's Garden Hotline. I will see you next week.